You're Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Tuesday edition of the Locked On NHL podcast. Joe DiBiase from Locked On Sabres, joined as always by Mike DiStefano from Locked On Leafs. Mike, real quick, before we get going into hockey stuff, I was just debating with some buddies. Spicy nacho Doritos or nacho Doritos? Quick.
Let's go with spicy nacho Doritos.
Thank you. I get heated over potato chip debates, which should tell you something about me, but always spicy nacho over the regular nacho. I know they're classic and everything, but come on. Like, they're just an upgraded version of the original nacho cheese Doritos.
I'm not a massive like Dorito guy either, though, to be honest. Oh. So I'm not the man to ask for a Dorito. I'm more of a classic chip brand kind of guy. Lay's, give me some Lay's, yeah. Salt and vinegar, or yeah, yes. Something like that. You guys have awful chip flavors in the States, though. Were you really? Even aware of that?
No.
Oh my God! You guys don't even have ultra-dressed.
No, well, that has started to come out a little bit. Like Ruffles has put out like an all dressed, but I don't think they're really the same, because I've had hers all dressed, or hers ketchup chips, maybe even both, or those, I don't even know if those are different things, and like they're not the same, I don't think. So
no, ketchup and all dressed are two totally different kinds.
Okay,
they're two delicious kinds. Yes, but they're different in flavor.
I
dill
love
pickle it. You've never had dill pickle chips too, right?
Yes, but the Lay's, oh, I never liked the Lay's dill pickle that they come out
so,
with.
So, quick funny story. So, we have like some family friends from California, and so the one guy was kind of in the area. He was in the area in Buffalo doing some work work, I guess. And so we stayed at our place, actually, just kind of came over and hung out for a little bit. And we introduced him to all like the Canadian flavors of chips. So we showed him ketchup and dill pickle and all dressed and, you know, all these goodies that you guys don't get down the States, or at least you didn't at the time. And I remember he had ketchup. He's like, oh, that's okay. He did not like the dill pickle. He thought it was the weirdest thing, having a dill pickle flavored chip, which to me is bizarre, because dill pickle is a pretty fantastic flavor. And to have that in chip form, it's just like two of the greatest things combined into one.
I didn't even realize it was more of like a brand thing here. I thought it was more, I didn't realize more of a flavor thing. I thought it was just the brand that you were talking about. But yeah, like that's three. I mean, what you're saying is very popular flavors up there that you can get them here, but they're rare. Like you can't, like you gotta get lucky almost to find like the Ruffles all dressed or the Lay's dill pickle. Like they exist, but they're not just on every shelf. So that's interesting.
You guys don't have passion flakies either, right?
I don't even know what that is. What is that? Passion flakies? God.
Joe, when the border opens up, we're gonna have to get a meetup and exchange some goods. You can get me some good IPAs from the Buffalo side, and I'll get you some good snacks, including passion flakies. It is fantastic.
A little international trade that we can get going once the border reopens. Might not be too far off, by the way. I think, you know, things are completely opened up here. I don't know how vaccination rates and how things are opening up back there. I don't even know if you guys can golf yet, by the way.
We can, yeah. Golf opened up a couple weeks ago, but still like no indoor dining or anything like that. So luckily the weather's been pretty nice over the past little bit. So you've been able to get in some patio action, especially during the World Cup. And now Stanley Cup playoffs, the Stanley Cup final has started, and being able to sit down with a pint and watch the game has been pretty, pretty cool.
Yep. And we'll talk about the Stanley Cup final. Game one took place last night on Monday night. So we'll talk a little bit about game one in the series in general. Got some housekeeping stuff to get to, some news items in the league, though, a lot of which came from Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, who held their State of the League press conference before game one on Monday. So we'll get to that in a second. But here on Tuesday morning, we had a big contract in the league that was signed. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins sticks around in Edmonton for 8 years at $5 million per year. Mike, I thought this was a little strange. It's kind of rare that you see a guy that is still considered to be in the prime of his career signed for less money per year than he was previously making. I'm not sure I've ever seen that. I thought that was a little strange.
Yeah, and I think it's a term thing. I think he wanted the 8 years, and in order to go the full eight, I think he had to sacrifice a little bit of that AAV. But it still does seem a little bit on the light side, I guess. Kind of a very team-friendly contract, which I wasn't expecting. I thought Nuge would get somewhere in the neighborhood of six to seven million, and for them to scoop him up at just a hair over five per, I think is a nice piece of work there for the Oilers. So I mean, I think he's still a quality player, a top six guy, former number one overall pick. So yeah. It's good for them to get him locked up, and to be able to shave a little bit off his AAV over the last couple of years opens up a little bit more cap space for them. And the Oilers, you know, they've got decent amount of cap space to work with this year. I think they had about $30 million or so before signing Nuge, and they've got a couple other deals. I think they got to sign Tyson Barry to another deal as well. But you know, that's another destination that, like, a Leafs forward Zach Hyman has been linked to a little bit. Get Connor McDavid, a nice little gritty winger who can score some goals. So they've got the cap space to do it, and getting Nuge under contract on a nice money, nice AAV is kind of one step closer to being able to build up that team around McDavid.
Yeah. You had another more minor signing occurring in the league today with your Maple Leafs, Wayne Simmonds, 2-year deal, $900,000 per year. It seemed like he was fine as a fourth liner last year, right? I mean, you would have watched him more than I did.
Yeah, he was okay. I mean, he signed for $900,000. So that's about right. What he is worth. Like, I would say that's probably, you think about someone who makes, you know, a hair under $1 million in the NHL. That's about the production you saw to Wayne Simmonds. Granted, I would say actually it was kind of an up and down year for him. Like he at points of this season kind of rocketed up into the top six and had an opportunity up there. You know, he sparked the team a little bit with some big hits, some fights, you know, got some power play time, killed off some penalties, was like a good net front presence, a little bit of a pain in the butt to deal with. So, you know, he was a decent player, was quite quiet in the playoffs though, which ultimately is why I thought that maybe they would move on from him. Cause I just think that the Leafs talked about at the end of your presser, how they want to find a different, kind of go a different route, get guys who've been there before, done it. They've guys who've won, and, you know, re-signing Wayne Simmonds, I thought doesn't really echo that. And I was a little bit surprised that they decided to bring him back, but at $900,000, I mean, he's someone who realistically could be your 13th forward, and it's not even going to be, you know, that big of an issue, or you could toss him on your third or your fourth line. He can still kill some penalties. But at that deal, at that rate, I have no problem with it.
Yep. All right. Well, what else have we got? We've got the Bettman stuff from yesterday. We can get into that here. You had the All-Star game being announced for 2022. It's going to occur in Las Vegas. You had the Winter Classic at Target Field in Minneapolis next year being announced between the Minnesota Wild and the St. Louis Blues. Stadium Series game next season in Nashville between the Predators and the Lightning. You're going to continue to see ads on helmets, but not on jerseys. I think a lot of people were wondering, all right, they got a taste of it, like the ads on the top of the helmets, which pretty much I think they blended in for the most part. They were fine. When will they eventually put an ad on jerseys? That's not happening this year. We'll see if it happens in the coming years, but it definitely won't for 2021-22. I think the biggest news, though, really coming out of this press conference was the Olympics and how pessimistic Bettman sounded. Now, Bill Daly didn't sound as pessimistic, but it was interesting that Bettman kind of turned over that question to Bill Daly by saying, like, Bill, why don't you handle this one? You've got the details on it. And then twice throughout Bill's answer, Bettman like jumps in with like, well, it's a work in progress. And like Daly was kind of keeping the door open. Like, he was admitting that they've got a few weeks to make a decision, that they've got to know, like, this can't go on forever. But Bettman, man, jumping in, like, Bettman did not sound to me at all like somebody that thinks that this is going to happen.
completely lawyer, right? Like that's right. Bettman's lawyer coming out in him, yes. Where his client was saying something that he probably shouldn't have said and felt like he needed to come in, rescue, save the day, and be like, well, no, nothing's definitive quite yet, but you know, we want to do something. We're trying our best. We want to, you know, we made a promise to our clients, to our players, that we're going to do this. We're going to try our best, yada, yada, yada. Right. But at the end of the day, Joe, like, I wouldn't be shocked if they don't end up going. Like, I would hate it. Obviously, we're both big fans of the big international tournaments. It's been a long time coming since we've been able to see best on best tournaments. And I want the Olympics to come. But I was with the pandemic, you know, two shortened seasons in a row. Next year will be kind of the year to get things back on track, and for them to have to kind of derail the entire season for 3 weeks to get the Olympic Games in, I think is going to be tough for them. Plus, you know, they were talking a little bit about, I saw some quotes pop up that there was some discussion about how the pandemic could still put a little wrinkle into things. Just not exactly sure if the world is going to be exactly back to normal next year. How are travel restrictions still going to be in play? Is that going to be an issue going halfway across the world to Beijing, and whether or not that will pose a problem to trying to get a deal done and get these guys to the Olympics? And I guess in a way, as of now, like you can see that may be an issue, but Joe, like you got to think a year out from now, like, well, I guess not, well, it's not even that really that long away. It's what, February? So it's not even that long, but you know, you would hope that by February, it seems like these vaccine rollouts are working, you know, around the world. People are starting to get back to normal. We're seeing the Summer Olympics are about to go off in Tokyo. I think assuming everything goes well there, I think the NHL players will have a pretty good argument to them, say, hey, they were able to do it over there, no problem. Why is this going to be any different, you know, 6 months later? And, you know, it's 6 months more of vaccine rollouts, of people being double vaxxed, of the world getting back to normal, travel restrictions lifting a lot more by then. So I think the players are really going to be keeping an eye on how things work through the Summer Olympics to be able to say, hey, they did it. Why can't we?
Right. I think part of it too is probably where the games are being held in general in Beijing. And I could see why there might be some hesitation to send your players halfway around the world. When it comes to what we don't know where we're going to be at the pandemic at that point, like way it's trending. I mean, by next February, you'd like to think that we're just going to be over and done with it. But I don't know, man. Like, if you read the news about like these other strains that are taking over in India and in Southeast Asia, I know that's not typical. That's not China geographically, but it's much closer geographically than it is here. Like, I don't know. Things don't have to go perfectly over the next 8 months, whatever it is, till next February. So I could see why there'd be some hesitation on that part as well. My guess is they are not going to go. And I think one sign that you can look at for that is just simply the All-Star Game. They announced that next year they're going to have the All-Star Game in Vegas. And they did not have an All-Star Game when they went to the Olympics in 2006. They did not have an All-Star Game in 2010 or in 2014. So if you just read the tea leaves there, they announced not like their next All-Star Game, that the 2022 NHL All-Star Game would be in Las Vegas. So to me, that's a signal in its own that they don't think that, or the league is not planning as though that the players are going to the Olympics.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I didn't even think about that, but you're right. If they're willing to kind of put a halt in the middle of a season to have the All-Star Game, that does kind of signal that they're not going to want to, like, 3 weeks from then pack up shop and, you know, allow the best players in the league to leave for 3 weeks. Right. You know, that doesn't happen. Like the years where there are Olympic games, Olympic breaks, they just don't have an All-Star game, right? As you noted. So that's a good, a really good point made by you. And I wonder if the players deep down know about this and they're kind of maybe just waiting for, you know, the Stanley Cup final to be over and done with before speaking out publicly and you know, having a public negotiation about this. But yeah, that's something to think about for sure.
Yeah, and it's going to suck because, like you said, I love international hockey. and you get the World Juniors every year, and that's fun. That's nice. I do enjoy that. But like, just to not have that Team USA, Team Canada potential matchup on the world stage, or just the best of the best going at it for their countries, and to not have it again to where it's going to be going on, what, 8 years? It's going to be 10 years at least by the time we next get it. And who's to say when that's ever going to happen again? Because I don't know, like, if they want to keep, if they don't feel like the market is worth it, if they don't feel like where the location is worth it, like if it was in Vancouver, of course they're going to go. If it's in somewhere in the United States, then it's a lot easier for them to go. But China, South Korea, next Winter Olympics are going to be in Italy. It's like, well, do we really need to go to Italy? I thought maybe that the marketing part of it could get them to China, because they have been trying to build that up as a fan base. They had been sending teams over there to play preseason games. They had been adding or upping their ad revenue in China. I thought because they're trying to grow that as a potential market, that, hey, what's a better way to grow the game and to market your sport than to send your best players on the world's biggest sporting stage? But it doesn't seem to be enough to get them to do it. But one can hope. You're lucky too, because I'm telling you, man, this was the year. Team USA, the best team, USA hockey team I would have ever seen on paper, at least. And you guys are going to get away without having to face them.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Okay, Boomer.
All right. Let's take a break here. I got a Jack Eichel thing. I've got a new team that I think I would consider the favorite to land Jack Eichel, and it's probably not a team that you're guessing. I'm about to say.
Interesting.
And then we'll talk about game one, Montreal versus Tampa Bay, and the series as a whole. The Lightning went 5-1 last night. So we'll talk about game one, of course, as well in the Stanley Cup final when we return. Locked On NHL Podcast, Joe DiBiase and Mike DeStefano.
RockAuto.com, a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle, and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. A word for Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but you got the NBA, college hoops, the NHL, all in full swing. Bet Online even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. For these Saber games, you could bet on the exact amount of which either the Sabres or their opponent will win by. So if you think the Sabres are going to win by exactly two, you can find odds for the Sabres winning by exactly two. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds, the best way to place your bets, and it is free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline.ag is the site. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Remember to use the promo code Locked On.
Welcome back to the Locked On NHL podcast. Joe DiBiase at Sneaky Joe Sports on Twitter. Mickey at Mickey underscore Canuck for Mike. Did you have a nice little surprise on your Twitter account on, what was it, Saturday? A little blue check mark up in there. How about that?
Did I ever, Joseph? That was pretty neat. Officially in the verified club. Oh, yeah, that's pretty cool.
I had actually, because they just reopened Twitter Verified, like that you could apply for it. They went a couple years, I think, without adding anybody, unless like you knew Jack Dorsey, the Twitter CEO. They had reopened it a couple months ago, and I actually, like, because it's very easy to apply. You just go into your privacy and security part of your settings, and you just hit the button, request verification. And they're like, all right, we'll get back to you. And then, like, a couple weeks later, I got, oh, well, you don't qualify for it. even though like I've got other people like in my field that are getting it. I'm like, okay, it seems kind of random, but like whatever. And then it's like a week later, it's like, okay, I have it. But I guess it's because we had our boys at Locked On Podcast up in upstairs were reaching out to get that for us. So that was a cool surprise. So yeah, go follow us on Twitter. I've got a lot of Eichel stuff coming out, of course, with Locked On Sabres. It's really kind of what we're doing until that trade inevitably happens. That's basically where our focus is going to be. And like, Mike, I'm sure you've heard like the usual teams mentioned for this. Like you've heard the Rangers, although I think they might be out on this at some point. The Kings are always mentioned. The Ducks have come on as a very strong candidate. A lot of times the Blue Jackets get mentioned because they have three first-round picks and that need for a first-line center. But I've got a team that I think you might consider surprising. I think they'll trade partner. What do you think of Vegas for Jack Eichel?
Yeah,
they have got – go ahead.
Well, that's been talked about quite a bit as of late on my station on TSN, and it's gonna cost like what do they have to trade though? You know, like I mean, it's they want what, a first round pick, a roster player, and a grade A prospect. Well, it's like the package, right? So what's the package that they have?
The latest on what the Sabres want for a package is they want four pieces that are at least the equivalent of first round picks in value, and they want straight futures. That's it. They if you want to send them your third line 27-year-old winger, not interested. Like the Sabres want futures.
Right. I meant a good young roster player, like a Cody Glass player, not Nick Holden.
Right. Okay. That makes more sense. Yes. That is right. That's correct. And I think Vegas's best offer would have to be on the table, because I think for them to get in the room with what Anaheim could offer, what Columbus could offer, because like those teams, one, have the high level prospects, but they have the high draft picks. I mean, Anaheim picks third and Columbus picks fifth. I know it's not a great draft class, but still, when you're playing around with top five picks versus where Vegas is, which I think is 28th or 29th, it's a lot easier to be sold on the Columbus or Anaheim packages. But if Vegas did come at them with – they've got two high-level prospects still. Peyton Krebs, whose development since going – I think he was 17th overall 2 years ago. He's kind of emerged as Vegas's like number one prospect in the system. I think he's enticing. I think Cody Glass, even though he hasn't been great in his limited action with the NHL, still was a high pick from a couple years ago, sixth overall, I think, in their first draft class. They've got another kid they drafted end of first round last year, Brendan Brisson, and they've got their first round pick. So to me, like those three guys, if they're getting in the room with Anaheim and Columbus, if you're going to outbid those high draft picks, I feel like you got to have those top three prospects in there. But the reason I think that Vegas would come at the Sabres with their best offer is they just scream to me to be that organization that is – they've done it, right? They've been ultra aggressive. They made the finals in year one. It's like, all right, we're going to – big swing. Let's go sign Paul Stastny to big money. No, that doesn't work. All right, let's dump Stastny's money and let's go trade for – Pacioretty and Stone, and let's give them massive contracts. It's like, okay, that's not enough. All right, let's go give Alex Pietrangelo the biggest contract we could give him out in free agency. We have Marc-Andre Fleury. Oh, we're not satisfied with how he's playing. Let's go trade for another goalie. Let's go get Robin Leonard and then sign him to an extension. Like Vegas just always takes these big swings, which is why to me, they could get the team that would just get stupid with value, where like they just throw the Sabres five things that are at least pretty valuable, and maybe they could wiggle their way into it. So that's my thought on Vegas. It's a lot of it is more so their motivation and their aggression they've showed over the years, as much it is their prospects. Because I know they're not the best team for assets.
So absolutely. The only other thing too, though, is like Eichel comes with a big ticket, right? Like $10 million. Yes. Vegas is already up against the cap. Like they still have a bunch of guys to sign. As of now, with a roster size of 18 players, they only have $6 million in cap. So, and they, you know, Alec Martinez is someone who they'd like to get re-signed to, who's probably actually like their only decent UFA they have to sign. So, but regardless, that'll cost a little bit of money, and I assume they want to bring him back. So if they are bringing in a Jack Eichel type player, someone with big money is going to have to go out, whether that's William Karlsson, Jonathan Marchessault, maybe a Riley Smith, one of those guys who are a little bit older, but, you know, top six players will probably have to go the other way in any type of package for a Jack Eichel, just to kind of keep in mind for people who are trying to try and come up with some mock trades to land Eichel in Vegas.
It's a very good point. You know what my workaround for that has been, and it's a tough sell. In fact, it might even be completely illogical. My workaround for that is Fleury. Fleury at $7 million for one more season. Now, the issue here is that, well, like, it fits for the Sabres because they have got a goalie prospect in Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen who they see as their future number one, but they do not want to thrust him into the number one job next season. They want to give him one more year. So basically what the Sabres are going to be searching for, considering they have literally zero, I'm not kidding, they have zero goaltenders for next season other than Luukkonen, and they probably want him in the AHL. They need a guy just for 1 year. They need a guy for at least 1 year, just as kind of like a bridge guy to get them over to Luukkonen. Fleury's got 1 year left on his deal, $7 million. That could work. The problem here, and maybe why this is completely unfeasible, Fleury's got a 10-team no-trade list, and I would bet every cent I own that the Buffalo Sabres would be on Marc-Andre Fleury's no-trade list. So somehow you would have to convince him to come to Buffalo, and that might be the toughest sell in hockey at this point. But yeah, if you could somehow get him to do it, that's your cap fix, right? Because it's $7 million out, $10 million in. They could work with that. But again, you got to get Fleury to do it. So that's probably crazy.
I don't see that happening. Yeah, too, like the only way is if it's maybe a three-way trade where Fleury goes somewhere else and
or
the trade gets a little bigger. But if it's just like a one-for-one type deal, well, not one-for-one, but like trying to offset salaries, I do not see Fleury waving to go to Buffalo's. Great as a city it is, you know, they got amazing chicken wings, some pretty good breweries, decent golfing. Not sure it's the place for Fleury in his final couple of seasons in the NHL.
No, that's right, because he wants to win a cup. I the one thing I just thought of, though, while you were talking, and you correct me if I'm wrong on this, didn't the Hurricanes promise Patrick Marleau in that cap dump trade a couple years ago that they would buy him out?
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah, that could be, but does that really seem like something Pegula would be willing to do? I know he's been pinching pennies quite a bit with the Sabres the last few years.
Fair point. You'd have to get ownership. That's another element of it, because that also seems like a tough sell. Okay, so I'll leave the Fleury idea at the roadside here. All right, just thought I'd throw that out there. I think Vegas is very enticing right now for Eichel. But we'll see. We got at least a month, I think. Well, it could happen any day, this trade, but I think it happens within the next month before the NHL draft. All right, before we run out of time, let's talk about the Stanley Cup final. Game one last night, Montreal gets, trounced on the scoreboard 5-1 by the Tampa Bay Lightning. The deeper numbers would show the game was a little bit closer. Scoring chances, in fact, Montreal actually outchanced the Lightning 27-23. High danger chances, Lightning just topped them at 8-7. Shots on goal were pretty low for both sides, 23 for Tampa, 17 for Montreal, although that was only a 5-on-5, I should say. I thought
they had about 27 shots regardless, so still wasn't even that high, like under 30.
Right, that's right. I thought Montreal was maybe not as bad as the scoreboard indicated, but even though the scoring chances were in that direction, like Tampa, man, like they just got guys that can finish every – you give them opportunities, it's a higher level of scoring rate than you're going to get on these other teams that Montreal had played where, yeah, you can limit chances and you might win that way. Tampa, like, I feel like you can limit chances, but just because Stamkos on that off wing on the power play and Kucherov, who's dangerous from any end of the ice, like, I was already in on Tampa winning the series. I think what I said on the Friday episode with Gil Martin was that I had Tampa in five. No, I didn't see enough last night to make me change from that, I'll say.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. I to me, there was three things that really was the difference in the game last night. I thought, like, from a Montreal perspective, for them to be competitive in this series, they had to do, like, a few different things. And here's what I thought led to the loss. They lost the middle of the ice. Like, if you look at the heat maps, it's absolutely blood orange in front of Carey Price in terms of shots. And that's where the goals were all scored from, right in front of the net or in the slot area. At 5-on-5, obviously, there was that nice goal by Stamkos on the power play that was out front. But mistakes and turnovers, like you said, you need to play a near-perfect game against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And if you don't play mistake-free hockey, that's not going to go well for Montreal. You know, a couple of mistakes and some bad puck luck is really what cost them. You know, you look at a few of those Tampa goals coming off of reflections and bad bounces, but a couple came off the rush, like giveaways, trying to gain the blue line. And Tampa's just too fast, too skilled to not capitalize on those chances. Like, their counterattack is just unbelievable. And I think the biggest one too, and this is something that's going to be interesting to watch going forward, John Cooper just flat out coached Luke Richardson. For Montreal, Phil Deneau needs to be on the ice when he's playing, when Brayden Point is on the ice. I quickly last night took a look at the breakdown of Deneau or Point, his numbers with Deneau on the ice versus the rest of the Habs. So John Cooper did a pretty good job of evading Deneau when Point was out on the ice in that line. So Point versus Deneau was just 2 minutes and 10 seconds at 5-on-5. Point was 0 for 4 on offensive zone faceoffs, had a zero Corsi percentage, and obviously had 0 points. Against the rest of the Habs, 11 minutes, 22 seconds, a 71.43 Corsi 4 percentage with 2 points, plus he had another assist on the power play. So 3-point night, but like, that just goes to show, like, that's just good coaching. That's John Cooper making sure that he won the matchup game and took advantage of that home ice advantage, right? People sometimes forget that one of the biggest advantages to actually having home ice, besides for the crowd and the atmosphere, is having last change and being able to dictate the matchups off of faceoffs. And that is something that, you know, John Cooper took advantage of last night. And he was able to get points off of Deneau's matchup line, and they were able to take advantage. Now, for me, going forward, I need to see Montreal make a concerted effort to try and get Deneau out when Point is on. I'm not an NHL coach, so I can't really give you a definitive way of how to do that. But that is something that I think that Luke Richardson, technically not head coach in the league. This is where some inexperience is kind of showing up a little bit. He's got to figure out a way to try and win those matchups when he's on the road and get the matchups that he wants, or else the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to expose, you know, Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki, if that's who is going to be out there defending against Brayden Point and Nikita Kucherov.
Right. Real quick, by the way, is any change to whether or not Canada is rooting for Montreal? I know we've talked about this a couple times.
Oh, it's honestly like a 50-50 split. I know that I got absolutely crucified on Twitter by a bunch of Leafs fans calling me, you know, a fake Leaf fan. How could I possibly root for the Montreal Canadiens? And you know what? I don't even think it's that I'm rooting for the Montreal Canadiens, but I'm rooting for the individual success of guys like Shea Weber and Carey Price, just because, you know, they had so much success internationally for Canada that I like them as people. I like them as players. I kind of always have. They've always had a little soft spot for me. And now that they're competing for a Stanley Cup, like, I want them to win the Stanley Cup. And, you know, by them winning, obviously that means that Montreal has to win. So, you know, I've kind of changed my stance where I'm not really now, I'm not saying that I'm rooting for Montreal to win, but I'm rooting for the individuals on Montreal to win. You look at what happened to Brendan Gallagher too. I mean, that guy is battling his ass off. Like, that is a warrior. He's got some war wounds, and, you know, I want it all to pay off for him with the Stanley Cup ring and make it all worth it, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, rooting for the individuals more so than the crest on the front of the jersey. There's also whether or not you should just be rooting for the underdog. Tampa was just winning it last year. I mean, they've been this juggernaut for years. Montreal, like, nobody really thinks they really should be here. But here they are. And now, by the way, if you want the betting underdogs, I mean, holy cow, they're plus 485 to win this series. I mean, the betting odds would tell you that it's over already. So, I mean, I can understand why there would be part of that, too. I'm actually, I know we got to go here, but like, part of me is rooting for Tampa. Part of me is rooting for Tampa because I really like to focus in on roster building across the league. And I don't know, I just feel like Tampa over the years has done a better job than Montreal. And I feel like they deserve the fruits of that labor. But we'll see. I start watching the games and I very easily get sucked towards the underdog. So that already happened a little bit for me in game one, and it probably will in games two and three. So, all right, well, that's going to do it for us today on the podcast. I'll be back on Friday. Me and Mike DiStefano will be back next Tuesday talking more about the Stanley Cup Finals. Follow us on Twitter at Sneaky Joe Sports and at Mickey_Canuck. This has been the Locked On NHL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.